Chumash Bamidbar, Perek Zayin, which is also the beginning of the fifth reading. This is a happy one. Vayehi bayim kalais Moshe lahakim es haMishkan. And so it was on the day that Moshe Rabbeinu finished establishing, erecting, or putting up the Mishkan. Vayim shach oisai, he anointed it. Vayikadesh oisai, he sanctified it. Ve'eskol kelov, and all of its artifacts and its vessels. V'yesa mizbeach, and the altar. V'eskol kelov, and all of the furniture, so to speak. V'yim shochem, v'yikadesh esem. He anointed it, and he sanctified it. So the interesting thing is, so this is a very happy day. The Mishkan is finished. Ein mukdam u'me'uchra b'teira. The Teira is not necessarily written in chronological order. And here we are, we're in the middle of the month of Iyar. And we were heading towards Eretz Yisrael. And now all of a sudden we recede back into a not too distant past. And we're in the month of Nisan, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan again. And this is after 7 days of Moshe Rabbeinu putting up the Mishkan and taking the Mishkan apart. Now finally Moshe Rabbeinu puts up the Mishkan. And this time it's for points, so to speak. And so when all that happens and everything is prepared, Vayakrivu Nesi Yisrael, the princes of the Jewish people brought Rosh Beis HaVesam, the heads of the father's homes, so to speak, Heim Nesi HaMateis, these are the princes of the tribes, Heim HaImdim Al HaPikudim, they are the ones who were standing by when Moshe Rabbeinu performed the counting. So the obvious question is, Vayehi is Loshen Tzar, Vayehi indicates some kind of squeezed reality, some kind of pain, some kind of anguish. How is it possible that this happy day begins with the words Vayehi? So the Zohar says there was pain in heaven. The Malachim had a difficult time letting go. They said, uh-oh, the Shechina is going down Lamata. And there it will remain. The Sikrenim says, remember, this is the day that Aaron's two sons died. In fact, they just died. So there was a certain Vayehi. There was a great joy that the Shechina had come to Jewish people, but at the same time, there was also a Vayehi, there was also great sadness and mourning amongst the people. That was like it punctuated the day, and it was like an undertone, and that's alluded to with the word Vayehi. Anyway, Vayim Kalois Moshe, the word Kalois is rather odd, so Rashi points out that the word Kalois is written Kalas. Kalas Ksiv, the word, it's written in the Sefer Torah without the Vav. At least that was the version of Rashi. It does not seem to be our version, but that was the version of Rashi. And so, Rashi says, there was Yom HaKomas HaMishkan, the day the Mishkan was established, HaYisrael KeKhala HaNechneses LeChuppah. This was like the Jewish people were like a Kala who was going into the Chuppah. It was like a wedding day. It's a very, very happy day, a very glorious day, a very beautiful day, and good things are going to happen. Kalais Moshe, 1 second. Moshe Rabbeinu finished the Mishkan? He didn't finish the Mishkan. The Mishkan wasn't made by Moshe. Wasn't the Mishkan made by Tzalal and Aholiyav and Chol Chacham Lev? All these people were involved in making the Mishkan, all these wise people, and now Moshe Rabbeinu gets the credit? That's a big question. That doesn't seem fair. So the Torah says, Usalo Yakasav ben Moshe. The Torah pins this on Moshe, gives him the credit. The reason is Lafisha Masr Nafshe Alav, because Moshe Rabbeinu literally sacrificed himself. He totally committed and devoted himself. Lidais to see Tavnis called Dover Vadover Kemesha Hero Bahar. He didn't take anything lightly. He took everything seriously. You need your SFR back. There you go. So he took every little detail and he followed up on every detail and he wanted to make sure it was exactly as he saw it on the mountain. It was exactly what Hashem told him. And didn't let anything slide. Nothing just went by. Every little detail was important. And because Moshe Rabbeinu invested so much of himself, and because he was so concerned, and he had such worry and anxiety over every detail, Kemesha Roh Bahar has got a children in the mountain, to instruct, to guide, to show to those who are doing the work. And indeed, he did not make a single mistake. Everything was exactly as Hashem had shown Moshe, exactly as it had been ordained it should be. Chen Metzina with David, you find something similar with regard to David HaMelech, that even though David did not merit to build the Beis HaMikdash, but Lefish HaMasar Nafshal Binyan Beis HaMikdash, because he totally devoted and consumed himself with the building of the Beis HaMikdash, Shanemar, as it says in Psalm 132, Zechayir Hashem LeDavid Eskalu Noisay Hashem Nishbal Hashem V'Gaymer. Remember Hashem for David, the prayer of David, that all of the anxiety and the anguish and the how much he spilled his soul forth and tried to work so hard to prepare the Beis HaMikdash that everything should be done. He knew he couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash himself. Only Shlomo HaMelech could build it. But he did everything in his power and beyond that as soon as Shlomo would be able to, boom, everything should be ready. Everything should be prepared. Lafikach, therefore, Nikra Shal Al Shmai. That's why the Mikdash is called on his name. As it says, Re'ei Veischa David. In the Book of Kings it says, look at your house, David HaMelech. This is actually a pasuk that speaks much later on. It speaks about when the tribes of Israel divide, which is not even the son of David HaMelech. This is the grandson, Rechavim, of David HaMelech. Nonetheless, we still emphasize the idea of Veischa, David's Beis HaMikdash. So it's Moshe's Mishkan, it's David's Beis HaMikdash. They didn't actually build it, but they invested their whole selves into it, and as such, that's why it was called the Beis HaMikdash of David and the Mishkan of Meshem. B'yim Kaleis Meshem, Rashi says, V'loy Nemar, it doesn't say B'yim Hakim, the day of the erecting or establishing or building, Malamed, Shekal Shivis Me'am Meluyim, all 7 days of the installation. Hayom Meshem Amidai, U'mefarkai, Meshem Rabbeinu would put it up and take it down. U'v'eis Yayim, and that day, on that glorious 8th day, which was the subject of the parsha a number of weeks ago of Parsha Shmini, which now returning to those events. On that wonderful day, Midoy Moshe Rabbeinu set up the Mishkan, v'loy perkei, he didn't take it down. L'kach nemar b'yem kaleis Moshe l'hakim. This is the day that Moshe finished putting it up. Oysa hayoyim kolu hakam oysav. This is the day that Moshe Rabbeinu stopped putting it up. You see, if you remember, a good couple of weeks ago, we learned about Moshe Rabbeinu putting up the Mishkan, that he had to put it up by himself. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, it was a quasi-miracle, maybe even a big miracle. Moshe Rabbeinu put up and take down, put up and take it down, all by himself. And this was the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu playing that game. After this, it was no longer Moshe Rabbeinu doing it. The Levites stepped in, and they put up and took down the Mishkan. So this is Bayim Kaleis Moshe. Moshe finishes putting up the Mishkan. Moshe finishes putting up the Mishkan. He's not going to do this anymore. The Resh Chedesh Nisan Hoya. This was the Resh Chedesh Nisan. Basheni, on the 2nd day, Nisrafa Hapara, the Hapara Aduma was burnt. So now that the Beis HaMikdash was established, we're ready for Hapara Aduma. And Bishlishi, on the 3rd day of Nisan, Hizu Hazay Rishayna, people who were ritually in a state of ritual impurity, already were sprinkled, so to speak, and being prepared. And Uveshvi Gilchu, and on the 7th day, they shaved their head. And that's when they became prepared to be able to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. So this is when that whole process started to happen. So what happened on this beautiful day? When Moshe Rabbeinu finished building the Mishkan. What happened on this day when Moshe Rabbeinu... yeah. There you go. What happened on this wonderful day? It says, Mayimshech Vayikadesh. Rashi does not interpret what that means. However, the Mefarshim tell us, quoting the Gemara, that Moshe Rabbeinu anointed each and every object of the new Mishkan with the special oil, with the Shemen HaMishcha. And the Ibn Ezra says, Vayikadesh, he sanctified, this was with Hazoras Hadam, by the sprinkling of the blood, by the 7 days of Miluyim. So Moshe Rabbeinu thusly sanctified, everything was anointed, sanctified, and as they say, good to go. The Sif Sekoinim says something very interesting. It doesn't say anything about oil here. That says it elsewhere. It doesn't say anything about blood. That says elsewhere. So what would this be referring to when it says Vayikadesh, Vayimshachayis Vayikadesh? So the Sif Sekoinim says Moshe Rabbeinu verbalized. We know that when you use your words, words are very powerful. And with words, one can declare something to be Hegdash. So the Sif Sekoinim says Moshe Rabbeinu touched every item. And he said, this is hereby consecrated for service in the Mishkan. And then he went to the next item. And he consecrated by verbalizing each and every item, saying that this would be used exclusively for the purpose of Avodas Hashem, of serving God in the Mishkan. So what happened? So a lot of things happened on this day, but we're going to focus on now on the participation of the Nesiim, the princes. And that's how the pasuk finishes. The pasuk finishes Vayakrivu. The next pasuk part begins Vayakrivu Nesi Yisrael, the princes of Israel. Who were these Nesi Yisrael? So the Torah says, Haim, they are Nesi Hamates. So Rashi says, he already said in the beginning of pasuk Beis that they are Nesi Yisrael. Why did you have to repeat a second time that they are Nesi Hamates? You said they're the princes of the tribes. You said they're the princes of Israel. Why do you have to mention again that they are the princes of the individual groupings of Jewish people, of their tribe and the tribal formation? So Rashi says, you should know that these people have a deep history. They did not just suddenly become leaders of the Jewish people. Now that everything was hunky-dory and fine and dandy in the Mishkan, in the Midbar, we're going to have a Mishkan, and now we're going to bring Hashem's presence. And all of a sudden, the Nesi'im said, oh, sign me up. I'm ready to lead. No, Rashi says, Haim Nesi'a Mates, they are the original leaders. Haim Shaitrim Alei Ahayu Shaitrim Ben Mitzrayim. They were responsible in the land of Egypt to take care of the Jewish people. Somebody had to be, so to speak, in charge of the work detail. And that was what they were doing. But lest you think that they were kapos chas v'shalom, lest you think that they tormented the people, quite the contrary. They would be beaten on behalf of the people. They were there to protect the people with their very body. And so when the Egyptian taskmasters would come and say, why didn't they finish? They would make all kinds of excuses. And the Egyptians would beat these leaders, black and blue. They busted their chops and beat them up physically. And because of this, and they suffered, Shenemar, as it says, Vayuku, in verse 5 of the book of Exodus, it says that the leaders were beaten. Vayuku Shreiter Ben Yisrael, the leaders of the Jewish people, meaning the ones who were responsible for the work detail, were beaten on behalf of the Jewish people. And that, my friends, is why they were chosen for leadership. That's why they were chosen. There's an interesting verse in Yitzlov Alojner. He says that how come Meish Rabbeinu, before he went down to Mitzrayim, Hashem said, what's this in your hands? He said, Mata, a stick. He says, throw the stick on the ground. Throw the stick on the ground, what did it turn into? A snake. Then it says, Hashem said, what should you grab it by? The tail. That's the dumbest part to grab a snake by. If you want to save yourself, do not grab by a snake. Maybe grab his jaw, his face. So, Mincha Blulo says over there, that was the miracle. He grabbed it by the tail, and he didn't get bit. But Vichlav Alojner said like this, so you want to be a Meish Rabbeinu? You want to be a leader of the Jewish people? Get ready to grab snakes by the tail. You have to risk your life. If you're ready to risk your life for the Jewish people, then you can be a leader. If you're not ready to risk your life, if you're not ready to go on Mesiras Nefesh, don't even bother signing up for the job. So this was the story of the Nesi Yisrael. They did risk their lives. They did risk their welfare. They were, in fact, beaten. And Rashi goes on to say that these were the same people. They are the ones who stood by. Sha'amdu and Meisho Aaron, they stood with Meisho and Aaron. Kishumanu, as you saw when we read earlier in this same Parsha, of the counting, and of Parsha's Bamidbar, of the counting, that there was a parochial, a local representative of each tribe, and the tribes are counted. These are the same people. Kishumanu, as you saw, Shanemar, as it's written, Ve'itchim Yi, with you it should be, Ve'goimer, etc. So they brought gifts. What were the gifts they brought? Vayaviu es karbonam lefnei Hashem. They brought their offerings before Hashem. Sheish eglis tzav. 6 tzav wagons. We'll soon see what that means. Vishnei osar bakar, 12 cattle. Agola ashnei anasim. 1 wagon for 2 princes. Vishor le'echad. But 1 ox for each one. So 12 tribes, 12 oxen, 2 oxen per wagon, 6 wagons. In other words, they participated. They had this partnership. They got together to bring a single wagon. Now Rashi says, what is eglis tzav? Rashi says, ein tzav ela mechupim. These are covered wagons. You know, like the pioneers in Canada went out west, went in those proverbial covered wagons. Well, they weren't the first ones to use covered wagons. Covered wagons are being used in the desert. And that's the meaning of eglas tzav. V'chein, we find an example of this in the verses, in the prophecy of Yeshayahu. It says, uvatzabim uvifrodim. That over there it says, Mashiach will come, that all the nations of the world will come, and they will bring with them the remnants of the Jewish people. And they will bring them in an honored way in covered wagons. Whatever that means. Agolos hamachusos, wagons that are covered. Maybe it means they'll put them in a limo with tinted windows. I don't know. So, Kruyus Tzabim, that's what's called Tzabim. Now, this is a subject of great, you think so, eh? This is a subject of great dispute, what exactly Eglis Tzav mean. Whether it means covered, or, according to some of the other opinions, the word Tzav has a totally different meaning. For example, we have the Targum Yerushalmi who says that the word tzav means that there was a partnership. Like I said, savla tzav, kavla kov, pairs. It means that there was these wagons were led by pairs of oxen, which is like the Pasuk says. The Pasuk says there was 12 oxen, one ox per tribe, and together in pairs they would pull the wagon. In fact, we have some of the other Mefarshim emphasize that the idea was that they were coming together by achva, with a sense of brotherhood, that they came united, tzav, two shvatim, they went together in one wagon. She's in a wagon. She's in a covered wagon. And make a noise, little girl. No, make a noise. So that's what happened. That was the beginning of the carbon. They brought these covered wagons, one ox per tribe, half a wagon per tribe. Half a wagon, eh? Half a wagon per tribe. They really got cheap, these guys. They didn't want to bring a wagon per piece. They couldn't afford to bring a wagon. Why did they go partners? Why did they have to bring a wagon together with somebody else? So the Rebbe has a very interesting analysis of this phenomenon. This very strange phenomenon where the Nisian, the princes came, and these clearly were people who were familiar with sacrifice and ready to make sacrifice of their own personal well-being, so certainly they'll be ready to make sacrifice of time and treasure, and yet, comes the treasure. Everybody's giving only half a wagon. And especially according to Rashi, who does not emphasize that tzav represents brotherhood or partnership, but rather tzav means a covered wagon, why didn't they each bring their own covered wagon? Page Pei Gimel in the Biurim book. The Rebbe begins his analysis of this verse by saying, Yesh litmoya, this is a point to ponder. And it is actually quite astonishing. Lenoichach nedivas libam harbe shel bnei Yisrael, in sharp contrast to the incredible amount of generosity and open-handedness of the Jewish people, betrumaseim lemeleches hamishkan, when it came to giving to the Mishkan, as it says in Parshas Vayakel, that the magnanimity was to such a degree that Moshe said, "Stop." Stop. Never again in Jewish history was there an appeal, a fundraiser, where the leaders, the fundraiser, had to say, everybody, please stop bringing your money. Never happened again. There was always room for more, except for this time. And they gave in droves in a remarkable way. So, Echi Tochen, how is it possible? Shadavke Anasim, that these leaders who, as we learned previously, regretted last time coming at the end, and this time they wanted to come right at the beginning. And therefore, they came to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, oh, Mishkan established, sign us up. We want to be there. We want to make sure we're going to be participatory and so on and so forth. And they should give half a wagon apiece. Nesinas machtzis agolo? Half a wagon? What's up with that? Hatmiya gevede said, yesed al piyam super b'divir chazal. It gets even stranger. Because we learn in Maseches Shabbos on page 99, Sha'arba ha'agolos huktzavu l'bnei Merari, that four of these wagons were given to the children of Merari. And hispiku b'doichak rav, they had to work with unbelievable effort to fit karshe ha'mishkan, to be able to carry the planks, the boards of the Mishkan. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara. How did they manage to pile all those boards up into the wagon? And this was a very, very efficient use of space. In fact, the Gemara discusses this and argues about this. How did they manage to pull it off? So much so, ad kedekach shayetzorich b'shmira masmedes kdei shakroshim liyiplu me'agolos. They had to constantly be on the guard because these wagons were literally tottering. They were like overflowing. They had to be on the sides of the wagon the whole time to make sure nothing would fall off the wagon. Now, incidentally, the word tzav, according to the Rivash, the Yosef B'choshar, is that the wagons moved at a very, very slow pace. They were very heavy wagons. They moved very slowly. So it would make sense. People could actually be on the sides of the wagon and they would not have to run to keep up with the oxen because these were very, very heavy wagons. And we also know that these wagons, which were covered and made for the purpose of carrying what they would have in the Mishkan, were, I guess, amenable to it, but just barely. The Gemara says literally you had to beat it to make sure everything stayed on. Well, if that was the case, that means they didn't have enough wagon space, or they barely managed to get by wagon space. So give another couple of wagons, for heaven's sake. You got cheap all of a sudden? And here you're saving money? You're going to show leadership. You're going to bring an offering. You're going to start things off right. So what's going on over here? Half a wagon? Especially because it just barely was enough. Behesem leklal, this is especially astonishing in keeping with the rule, ein anies b'mokem ashiris. The same Masechet, the Gemara says 2 pages later, that when we deal with opulence and wealth and nobility, no anies, we don't penny pinch. Beis HaMikdash, everything is top of the line, first class. There's absolutely no restrictions and, you know, belt tightening and fund saving. We don't implement any of those kinds of controls when it comes to the Mishkan. The Mishkan, everything went with opulence. Well, in that case, how do you explain having to give half a wagon, especially since that was barely able to handle the load? So kol ma'aseh Mishkan v'Migdosh na'aseh b'eishev v'chava, except for this. You think so? The Yesh Levayer. So the Rebbe says, here's an explanation. Haklal, the rule, Ein aniyus b'mokem ashiris, we do not have budgets and implement fund saving and tightening the belt and so on and so forth. This is not nisyachas le ramason ha'echusis shel melechas ha'mishkan. This refers to quality. We didn't pinch on quality. We didn't get stingy on quality. Everything was of the finest quality. The chaymorim hayikarim, they used the best materials, the most expensive materials. Avleina pirishayiv mishkan pratim miyutarim. It doesn't mean that there was extra details. There was no waste. Not to be cheap, meaning not to use penny pinching measures. Does not mean that there was waste. On the contrary, there was no waste. It doesn't mean there were things which weren't really used. Adrabe, kedushase shel hamishkan, the holiness of the mishkan, mechayeves necessarily means shel yiyeh bei shum davar levatala. Everything should be used 100%. Nothing should be, so to speak, superfluous or extraneous. Ela kol prat uprat, each and every detail, shabai in the mishkan, Yavil de nitzel malei umuchletes, has to be utilized and harnessed and channeled 100%. Everything has to be used 100%. V'lachein, therefore, Torah Manasim rak sheish eglis agolis v'liyesa. Therefore, they brought only 6 wagons and not one extra wagon. Why is that? Me'acha shenitan, because af im bekushi b'deichik, it was possible, even with tremendous effort, but it was possible. If the Mishkan can be transported in 6 wagons, then there's no place to add another wagon. Then there'll be extra room. Shekein b'mikra kazeh, if there would be a 7th wagon, lei tenutzal kol agola b'milua, then every wagon is not fully utilized. And that would be a waste. And a waste would be a shame, and that's inappropriate. So, did they have penny-pinching measures? Did they use lesser quality materials? Definitely not. They used only the finest and only the best. Everything was designer names. There was no no-frills, so to speak. You could shop in no-frills, but not when it comes to the Mishkan. However, when it came to utilizing all of the potential and all of the wherewithal that were given to the Jewish people, the Mishkan... In the Mishkan, we used every little detail. Nothing, and a single thing was extraneous. Nothing was extra. And the Rebbe says, really and truly, there is a marvelous lesson in Avodas Hashem, in our own service of God. Amru Chazal, our sages do tell us, once again in Masechet Shabbos, this on page 77. Kol ma shabara kadosh baruch hu beilomei, everything that God created in His world, lei bara davar echad levatala. Nothing was created superfluously, unnecessarily, or extraneously. Chol prat uprat. Every detail of the Bria has a matara, has a purpose. And because everything that Hashem created has a purpose, our job is to use it right, to channel, to harness everything Hashem created, and to sublimate it for a holy and a sacred purpose. Hu adin biyachas lekechaisa v'kishorav shel adam. The same thing applies not only to the world at large, but also to the world in a microcosmic way. You and what you represent, kol koyach, every talent, every ability, every kishoron, every kind of special gift that God has given you, Allah lahavtiach, you must be certain sheliyelch levatala, that it doesn't go for a waste. Eli yinutzel b'maloyoy l'avedasi yizbarach. It has to be utilized 100% for the service of Hashem. If the Eibishter gave you a talent, He gave it to you to use it. As the expression goes, that the Eibishter, it says, achush tarmenish patrin. It was a vartum chsidim. It says a talent is not allowed to be wasted. Ain dai, it's not enough l'mashal. Be'etzem uvda sha'adam enatzel ezmane. A person utilizes his time well, studies Torah, and he doesn't waste time. But that's not good enough, because that's only quantitatively speaking. How about the quality of time? How about Allah lasses mitech amal v'yigia? That if you're doing it, not only are you using your time, you're filling your time quantitatively, but you're also mustering, marshaling, and utilizing your time qualitatively, which means you use every ounce of wherewithal. You're using every iota of brain power, and every ounce of strength is being properly designated, properly harnessed and used. Tech nitzel out of the use of kol yecheleisav v'kishoneisav, all the person's wherewithal and ability, shem leikein. If not, if you're not using every ounce of strength you have, then what do we see? Then really, did God need to give you those strengths? No, so it was a waste. God gave you talents, God gave you abilities, and you wasted them. How could that be? God didn't create anything for, so to speak, extra, extraneous nature. That's not you. That's not needed. That's not required. And so, just as it is with every single talent and ability we have, so it is also with all the array of gifts that Hashem gives us, from time to treasure and everything in between. It's our mission and purpose to utilize everything Hashem gives us fully and don't leave anything on the table. And when you utilize all of your keiches, then you get to build a mishkan and actualize the Shekhinah in our world. And that's all for today.